Gotcha Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a thinker who, well, he didn't just reinterpret history, he kind of exploded our usual assumptions about it. We are diving into Michel Foucault's really challenging work, Madness and Civilization. You know, when most of us think about mental health history, we imagine this clear upward path, right, from darkness and chains towards science and, well, humane treatment. Our mission today, though, is to dig into Foucault's pretty radical and honestly unsettling idea that madness isn't some timeless disease that science finally figured out. Instead, maybe it's a concept shaped, even created, by history and by power.
Right. And what's really key here is the tension Foucault exposes. He makes us look back and ask, how did we get from a culture that sort of integrated the mad, maybe as prophets, maybe just symbols of something beyond reason? How did that turn into a society that systematically shuts them away, confines them, medicalizes them? We have to question that easy assumption that modern psychiatry is just straightforward progress. Foucault forces us to see it differently shaped, maybe less by pure science and more by shifts in power, economic needs, even moral judgments.
Okay, so let's get into the mind behind this critique.
Yeah.
Michel Foucault lived 1926 to 1984. Hugely influential French philosopher, social theorist, but not your typical historian.
Not at all. He's often called an archaeologist of knowledge. Which sounds grand, but it means he wasn't just listing dates or treatments. He wanted to dig underneath all that, to excavate the hidden systems of thought, he called them epistemes, that basically set the rules for what could even be thought or said as rational or true in a particular time.
Epistemes. Okay, that's a big concept. Could you break that down a bit, maybe related to this book? How does an episteme apply to madness?
Sure. So, like, in the 17th century, the dominant episteme, the whole framework of knowledge, it made it almost impossible to think of madness as, say, a biological problem like we might today. The only way it really fit into their thinking was as maybe a moral issue, a sign of laziness or just rejecting reason itself.
Yeah.
Foucault shows how that deep down way of thinking shaped everything, including how they controlled people.
Right. So if he's digging like an archaeologist, what did he actually unearth? What's the core idea in Madness and Civilization? It was just a doctoral thesis back in 61, wasn't it?
It was. And the core idea is that madness, as we understand it, isn't some universal thing. It's been socially constructed, built piece by piece through specific historical acts of exclusion, of locking people up, of defining them. His aim was kind of to write a history of madness itself, to try and capture the voice of unreason before it got pinned down and silenced by the language of science.
And he tracks this process across three really major shifts in Western history.
Exactly. First up, you've got the medieval and Renaissance era. Here, madness was still kind of integrated, symbolic. Think of the Ship of Fools image. The mad might be exiled, sent away on a ship, but they were still visible, still part of a conversation, a tragic dialogue, Foucault calls it, with reason.
Then things changed dramatically. The second shift, the classical age, so 17th and 18th centuries, this is what he calls the Great Confinement.
Suddenly, large numbers of people are systematically removed, locked away. And crucially, Foucault argues this wasn't really for medical reasons at first.
Okay, and the third stage.
That's the birth of the asylum in the 19th century. Now we see the shift from just locking people up physically to medicalizing them, giving it a scientific framework. But Foucault argues this is where the famous reformers, the ones we see as heroes, actually replaced the obvious physical chains with, well, tighter internal psychological ones.
Wow. Okay. That definitely turns the usual story on its head. Let's unpack those shifts more, starting with that Great Confinement. We usually think, okay, hospitals were built to treat people. But Foucault says, no, the driver was different. Yeah, this mass confinement that happened across Europe, Foucault connects it directly to the rise of, well, early industrial capitalism. It was about economic needs, social order, enforcing work discipline.
And you can see this in who was confined. Places like the Hôpital Général in Paris, they weren't specialized mental hospitals. They just lumped everyone together. The mad were in there with the unemployed, vagrants, people in debt, petty criminals, basically anyone seen as socially undesirable or unproductive.
So the common thread wasn't a specific illness. It was more like being outside the system, being idle.
Precisely. Idleness was a huge thing. Foucault points out that madness in this period gets defined partly by its relation to work, or rather the absence of work. It was seen as a kind of moral failing, a lack of discipline. So confinement was a way to, well, clear the streets and enforce the new economic order.
Which is such a stark contrast to the Renaissance you mentioned, where the mad figure could hold some kind of strange wisdom or challenge reason. The confinement seems to have just silenced that.
Completely. It reduced madness from something complex, maybe even insightful in a dark way, to what Foucault called pure animality, just irrational brute existence. And that dehumanization, of course, made it okay to treat people horribly. Think of places like Bedlam in London, where people paid to go and stare at the patients like they were animals in a zoo.
So this is the moment where reason, with a capital R, starts to define itself by what it's not. By systematically excluding everything it labels unreasonable, the dialogue breaks down.
Exactly. Reason sets itself up as the sole authority by silencing its opposite.
Which leads us to maybe the most provocative part of the book for many people. Foucault's take on the reformers. You know, Philippe Dunel in France, William Tuke in England. We learned they were the good guys, right? The ones who freed the mad from chains.
That's definitely the standard story we tell ourselves. Foucault's interpretation is radically different. He argues these reforms weren't really about liberation. They were about perfecting control, making it more efficient precisely because it became less visible, more internal.
Hang on. Is he saying Pinel wasn't genuinely trying to be humane? Or is this just Foucault being, you know, overly critical, looking for power everywhere?
It's less about Pinel's personal intentions, maybe, and more about the function of his methods within the system. Foucault saw Pinel's famous act of unchaining patients at the Salpêtrière as a kind of calculated theatrical gesture.
A gesture, meaning not entirely sincere.
Meaning it served a purpose beyond just kindness. Pinel replaced those physical external chains with something more subtle. The doctor's moral authority, constant observation, surveillance. The patient was now placed in this position of being constantly judged, needing to conform to the doctor's expectations. The doctor becomes this powerful figure, like a judge or a father, demanding obedience.
Okay, I can see that. It's almost like it's harder to resist control when it feels like it's coming from inside your own head, making you feel guilty or wrong, rather than just a physical chain you can see.
Exactly. And Tuke's York Retreat, the Quaker institution in England, worked similarly, Foucault argued. It used religious morality, the fear of God, the importance of community approval to instill self-control, guilt. The aim was to get the patient to internalize the rules, to police their own behavior. That achieves a deeper kind of subjugation, arguably, than just physical force.
So after these reforms, we get the rise of modern psychiatry. Madness isn't just about idleness anymore. It's defined as a medical pathology, something to be diagnosed and classified.
Yes. This is where the clinical gaze, as Foucault famously called it, really takes over. The suffering individual is transformed into an object for the doctor. They become a collection of symptoms to be observed, categorized, managed by the professional gaze. This solidifies the authority of the psychiatric system.
And in this process, the actual voice, the experience of the person labeled mad, gets lost, doesn't it?
That's Foucault's crucial point. Modern psychiatry, he argues, creates a monologue of reason about madness. Reason does all the talking. It defines the mad person's experience for them purely in terms of pathology. Any authentic voice of unreason, any dialogue is essentially silenced, filtered out, labeled as just another symptom. The connection is broken.
Okay, wow. That's a really powerful and frankly quite bleak historical picture he paints.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to boil it down. If someone reads Madness and Civilization, what are the main, maybe three or four big takeaways they should hold on to? Ideas we can use today?
Okay, first, definitely the idea of social construction. We have to get used to the idea that what a society calls madness or mental disorder isn't always just objective fact. It reflects that society's anxieties, its economic needs, its moral values. Think about it. In a society obsessed with productivity, things like, say, deep sadness or an inability to focus might get labeled as pathology more readily, right?
That links straight into the second big theme, doesn't it? Power knowledge. Foucault insists that knowledge, like psychiatric diagnoses or scientific classifications, is never neutral. It's tangled up with power. Authority over people gets established, and then the knowledge created under that authority reinforces the power. It's a feedback loop.
Exactly. Knowledge justifies control, and control shapes what kind of knowledge gets produced. And maybe the most unsettling takeaway for modern times is the idea of internalized control. Today's power often works by making the individual feel responsible, maybe even guilty, for their own state. It encourages self-monitoring, self-policing. We kind of participate in our own regulation, which is arguably much more effective than external force.
That's a chilling thought. We become our own guards.
Yeah.
And the final point.
Always maintain the critical lens. Be suspicious of those smooth stories about inevitable progress, about purely humane advancement. Foucault teaches us to look under the surface of reforms and ask, what new forms of control might be hidden here? what got traded for what.
Right. It's about questioning the narrative. Foucault's writing itself has some really sharp lines that capture these ideas too.
Oh, definitely. He has a way of putting things.
Like thinking about that economic definition during the classical age?
He put it bluntly, madness is the absence of work. That just cuts right to the heart of the Great Confinement, doesn't it? It shows the priorities.
And about how the patient's own voice gets lost.
He said, the language of psychiatry has been established only on the basis of such a silence. It highlights that monologue quality we talked about. The doctor speaks, the patient is spoken for.
He also had a sharp take on the reformers' claims to pure science.
Yes, he described Pinal's approach as a certain moral tactic overlaid by the myths of positivism, basically calling out the way moral judgments were dressed up as objective scientific necessity.
Maybe one more, just capturing that fundamental break he saw.
The constitution of madness as a mental illness affords the evidence of a broken dialogue. That really sums up the loss he's mourning, the end of that conversation between reason and what it excludes.
So, taking all this critical thinking, how can we actually use it today? What's the practical application of Foucault's skepticism in our world?
Well, one obvious area is a critical evaluation of mental health systems. We can use Foucault's lens to question our own diagnostic categories, like in the DSM. Are these labels always capturing objective biological reality, or do they sometimes pathologize what might be normal human reactions to, say, trauma or social injustice, or just the pressure cooker of modern life?
That makes sense, and it probably applies beyond just mental health, right? His ideas about surveillance and conformity.
Absolutely. You can use it for analyzing modern institutions. Think about schools, prisons, workplaces. Where do we see mechanisms that encourage self-surveillance, fitting in, internalizing the roles? Think about performance reviews or even social media algorithms that reward certain kinds of behavior and implicitly punish deviation. Where is self-policing encouraged, often subtly?
And on a more personal level.
I think Foucault pushes us towards personal reflection and empathy. If the line between normal and abnormal is historically shifting and culturally constructed, maybe we should be a bit less certain about our own definitions. It could foster a bit more humility, maybe more tolerance for ways of thinking and being that are different from our own. It challenges our own assumptions about what's sane.
The deep skepticism towards claims of objective, value-free knowledge, especially when it's used to manage people. That feels like the core, the lasting impact of Foucault here.
I agree. That's the final takeaway, isn't it? The value of this kind of genealogical analysis, digging into the history of ideas to uncover the power dynamics hidden beneath the surface, especially beneath scientific or medical language. Never take claims of pure objectivity at face value.
For me, what really hit home reading this was the idea that the most effective power isn't necessarily violent. It's the kind that shapes how we think about ourselves, our own sense of identity. And seeing those so-called humanitarian reforms potentially as strategic moves towards a tighter, more psychological form of control, well, it certainly makes you look at any institution claiming to help with fresh, more critical eyes.
It definitely leaves you with a lot to think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.